Oh, we're already paused. So we're broadcasting.
Yes, we're broadcasting.
We're live on air. Goodness gracious me. This is Fanny Crawford on Epic Radio, Eastern Panhandle Independent Community Radio, broadcasting from Shepherdstown, West Virginia. Today is October 31st, which is Halloween.
Ooh.
2016. And because it's Monday at 12 noon, you must be listening to the Epic Radio Hour. We're a web-based station. You can find us at www.enlightenradio.com. And today we have with us again, for the second time, co-host Adam Booth.
Hi, Fanny.
How are you, Adam?
I'm having a good day. It's this little turn in the weather has brought warmth in the temperature and in my spirit.
And sunshine.
Yeah.
Wonderful sunshine. Well, you have this box with you today.
I do. It's a musical instrument that I've brought with me.
It's a wild musical instrument. Tell us about it.
Well, I'm going to be using this later in the program. I'm going to share a story that is fitting of the season.
All
and
right.
So this musical instrument is called a Schruti box. I'll demonstrate it just a little
Woo!
Bit. It's an instrument that you can use for droning, as you're hearing right now.
Mm-hmm.
You can play a number of different pitches on it. It's an instrument that comes from India. It's a variation of the harmonium.
Oh, okay.
And I heard some friends using one recently, and I thought, oh, I've got to get one of those for storytelling, especially for October storytelling.
So you have a new
toy.
All of the sounds that come out of your body, your mouth, I should say that. And now you've augmented that with this amazing little machine. So we are going to get you to tell a scary story a little later in the program.
Yes.
But I also wanted you to share a little bit about your travels, because I know you've been at a couple of festivals.
I have.
Recently, and you're headed for another adventure in Kentucky. So tell us a little bit about what you've been doing.
Well, October is a busy month for storytelling. It's the month that feels the most right to gather together to hear tales. The winter's not quite here yet, so we still like to go out into that crisp evening air and hear tales. And it's just a time where, since you know the sun is setting early, it's a good time for bonfires. It's a good time for huddling together, that people like to hear stories. So it's a very busy month for people like us who are out on the road telling stories. So this month I've been at a number of different events around West Virginia, Tennessee, South Carolina, and a few places here and there between.
Wow. You have been busy.
Yeah. So I most recently was in South Carolina in Anderson at the Starburst Storytelling Festival.
And this is the first time I'm hearing about Starburst, so I'm very interested to hear.
Sure. This was the 12th annual Starburst Storytelling Festival. Starburst is an event that's put on by the Anderson County Library. They have a beautiful library down there in Anderson, South Carolina, that has a lot of community programs that they sponsor. So this storytelling festival, as I mentioned, this is the 12th year. And the way that they run their event is they bring storytellers from around the country to be their featured tellers for the week.
Mm-hmm.
They put the tellers into schools, public schools, throughout the week during the day. So the tellers are visiting schools and doing school programs, school workshops. They have 5 school districts, and so each year they highlight a different district or 2 districts where they put the tellers. And then at night, every night there is a featured solo concert where one of the featured tellers will present an hour and a half of storytelling at the library.
Mm-hmm.
So this year, I was the teller who gave the Monday night program.
Mm-hmm.
I did a program of October stories. I called it October and November. So I did October stories to begin with, and then November stories. So from Halloween and spooky and haunting into Thanksgiving and family tales. So that we didn't end on a too creepy of a note. On Tuesday night, Cast told stories. CAST is the Clemson Area Storytellers Guild.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, a lot of storytelling festivals like to will often feature local storytellers.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what Starburst always does. So on Tuesday, there were four tellers from CAST, as well as an MC from CAST. And they shared a variety of stories. They each told for a little under 20 minutes. And most of the tellers told what I would call an October story, and then one additional story to keep with the haunting theme, but also showcase what they can do. On Wednesday night, Bobby Pell was the storyteller. She lives in North Carolina, and she tells a lot of stories and sings a lot of songs from the Celtic tradition,
mm-hmm.
especially as the Celtic tradition appears within Appalachia.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She gave a program where she told North Carolina stories. She started in the mountains and moved to the east across the state with different stories.
Oh.
And then on Thursday night, to close out the storytelling festival, Tim Lowry was the featured teller. He lives in Somerville, South Carolina, and he gave a program of stories that was just a mixture of different kinds of stories and styles that he can present. He started with an Appalachian Jack Tale adaptation mm-hmm. of the Odyssey.
Uh-huh.
Then he told a Gullah story, and then he told the assassination of Abraham Lincoln, which was a brilliant telling.
Oh.
It was the star of the show. And then he closed his program with a tale about Sunday school.
So you had there was quite an eclectic mix of stories and tellers, but mostly Appalachian.
Yeah, I think it just so happened that all three of the featured tellers have an Appalachian connection at that festival this year.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was a lot of Appalachia there, even though the festival, you know, it's not really Appalachian centered as a lot of festivals in the Mid-Atlantic mm-hmm. okay. and South are.
Yeah. So now you're back in town.
Back in town for a few more days.
And then you're off again.
Yeah.
Well, tell us where you're going.
Well, this weekend I'll be at the Kentucky Storytelling Conference, which is the Kentucky Storytelling Association's annual gathering. The conference this year is in Pikeville, Kentucky, which is not far from where I grew up. So as we say back home, Pikeville. So I'll be in Pikeville this weekend. It is the Kentucky Storytelling Association's gathering, but they draw a large group of storytellers from beyond Kentucky.
Mm.
So, for example, I'm presenting there. I have some friends from Ohio and Florida who will be presenting. And the featured, the way that they have their conference is there will be a featured teller concert Friday and Saturday nights. And then all day Saturday there will be workshops.
Okay,
concurrent
so
sessions.
I was going to ask you to talk about the difference between a festival and a conference, and
yeah.
I think you've just segued into that.
Yeah, so that's a big difference. You know, a festival is usually telling-centered.
Mm-hmm.
So storytelling, we go and listen to concerts of storytellers, and there might be a workshop here or there for an additional fee, depending on the size of the festival. The conference is the opposite. Usually it's more centered on storytelling workshops,
mm-hmm.
and that could be for craft, that could be for storytelling business, could be for storytelling and healing, or you know, therapeutic storytelling, storytelling associations, building venues, things like that,
mm-hmm.
with a concert tucked here or there.
And what's the audience like for conferences? Are there a lot of newbies who are coming to try things out? Or
yeah.
are you mostly getting experienced tellers who are honing their long-time skills?
You have a mix of, okay. of both of those things. And of course, that will depend upon the conference and where it's being held.
Mm-hmm.
But you often see a mix of people who are professional storytellers,
mm-hmm.
people who enjoy listening to stories but have never told a story in front of a group and mm-hmm. never would,
mm-hmm.
those who enjoy it and would like to try it, and then you know, some intermediate to beginning storytellers who want to use this as a networking opportunity to also get themselves in front of other tellers so that they can get critique,
right.
so that they can get, you know, some eyes on them mm-hmm. so that hopefully they'll be invited to events. And just the general public, as well as people who like to use storytelling in their careers, such as clergy people,
oh,
librarians,
yeah. mm-hmm.
teachers, and so on.
So if we have listeners out there who are interested in these events, we should encourage them to try out a conference.
Absolutely.
As well as a festival.
Yeah.
A new opportunity.
And most guilds, throughout the country will have an annual gathering like this, a conference of some sort.
Mm-hmm.
And if your local guild doesn't, then there's probably one within a reasonable distance that you could get to.
And I have been hearing more and more about guilds since I am expanding my skills and networks.
Uh-huh.
And I don't think that Maryland has a guild. I know West Virginia has a very important guild that a lot of people from other states actually join because it's such a great way to network.
Correct.
And to learn.
Right.
What are some of the other guilds that you're familiar with?
Well, in our area, Virginia has one, the Virginia Storytelling Alliance. That's VASA, V-A-S-A. You mentioned the West Virginia Storytelling Guild. And just because these are titled or named or run by people in a particular state doesn't mean you have to be living in that mm-hmm. state to join, as you mm-hmm. referenced. Pennsylvania has a number of guilds and events that. The Susquehanna Storytellers Guild. There's one centered in Altoona. I think it's, I forget their exact title. There are, I think, 3 or 4 active guilds in the Pittsburgh area, at least. Again, the specific names of all of them, I don't know off the top of my head, but they're easy to find mm-hmm. through mm-hmm. a search engine online.
Okay. Does Philadelphia have an association?
I'm sure that they do, but I don't know off the top of my head.
Okay. And then there's the Association of Black Storytellers that's meeting this weekend in Philadelphia.
Correct. The National Association of Black Storytellers, NABS, is having their annual conference and festival in Philly this weekend.
Yeah, and I hope to get there.
Yeah.
That's my plan. Okay, well, I'm going to do a station ID at this point. You're listening to Epic Radio, Eastern Panhandle Independent Community Radio out of Shepherdstown, West Virginia. I'm your host, Fanny Crawford, and we are sharing the mics with Adam Booth this morning.
Hello.
He's been telling us a bit about his travels in October, one of the busiest months for storytellers. And Adam's been crisscrossing the region, and he's off again to Kentucky in a little while. I wanted to make sure that we give you an opportunity to talk about local events that you're involved with, starting with the Speak Series. And
sure.
then I also understand there's a community dinner.
Correct.
That's a fundraiser tomorrow evening. So
yes.
Tell us about both of those.
So listeners to your program will be familiar with the Speak Story Series because we talked about it on your very first episode of this show. And in case you're just tuning in, I'm sure you can go back and find an archive of those somewhere.
We are working on that. I know that John Case has been rebroadcasting uh-huh. some of those shows, so that one will probably show up again. It is archived, but I'm not sure it's available on the website to the public yet.
Just yet.
But we hope to get that up in just a few weeks. So
for those people that don't know, Speak is a story series that takes place here in Shepherdstown. We're closing in on the end of our 4th season, and we meet once a month throughout the non-winter months, so
yes.
from April until December, when people can get out.
We are respectful of the weather
yeah.
here in Shepherdstown.
We meet on the 2nd Tuesday night of the month, usually, and the meeting place is at the Shepherdstown Community Club. The concerts are always at 7:30, and we invite a nationally known storyteller to come to Shepherdstown for each of those concerts. And they present a concert that usually ranges between 60 and 90 minutes on the subject matter of their choice. They can tell whatever stories, do whatever programming they want. And so we have a concert coming up in a few weeks for November. But this will be the first time that we actually have changed our regular date.
So we need to say that over and over and over again so people get that.
Right. So normally we meet on the 2nd Tuesday, which in November this year is
Election
the
Day.
The presidential election, plus a lot of other important local elections. So we decided that since people would probably want to stay home and watch the returns, or not watch the returns, we would change the date of our storytelling event. So for November, we will be having our Speak concert on the 3rd Tuesday of the month. This month, it will be November 15th. And our featured storyteller is Oba William King, who is a storyteller from Chicago, Illinois. He's known as the poetic storyteller. He combines poetry with storytelling and African drumming. He shares stories that have a wide range of influences from his journeys to Africa to history around HIV and AIDS crises in different parts of the world to the history of the slave trade in the United States. And there's a lot of rhythm and rhyme mixed with all of those things. You and I both heard Oba last year at the NABS conference, which was in Washington, D.C.
Mm-hmm.
And I had heard him at the National Storytelling Festival as well that same year. And so we're very fortunate to have him come to Shepherdstown.
I do remember him as a very powerful teller, and I think I remember drums.
Yes.
It was good to hear him. He didn't have much of a set. It was a relatively short story, but it was a good one. Good. Well, I'm definitely looking forward to hearing Oba on the 15th.
Yeah.
Plan to be there. And tell our listeners how they can get tickets or get the advanced discount rate.
Sure. So tickets to the show are $10 if purchased in advance or if they're reserved in advance and paid for at the door. At the door, without a reservation, they are $12. And tickets can be reserved either by visiting Four Seasons Bookstore, usually about 2 weeks before the event begins is when they have our tickets for sale. Also by visiting speakwv.org or by phoning me at 304-886-9481. And I'll repeat that number. It's 304-886-9481.
And is that the easier way rather than the website, or are you encouraging people to use that?
Either one. Every now and then our form on the website just eats the form, eats the entry. And so if someone makes a reservation through the website and doesn't hear back from me in a day or so, then it means I didn't get it.
Yeah. Okay.
Can I plug our December show as well?
Yes, please do.
So in December, we will close out our fourth season with our 30th concert, which will include storytellers from the West Virginia Storytelling Guild, which we mentioned a little bit earlier. So we decide each season we have tried to feature local storytellers as well as nationally known storytellers to promote storytelling in our area. And so for this 30th celebration concert, we decided to hold a bit of a juried exhibit, if you will, a juried concert. So members of the West Virginia Storytelling Guild submitted entries, and then some of our regular attendees listened to those entries, scored them, and then we chose the top scores and invited them to come and share in this concert. So we have two tellers from the guild who will come and share stories. And those tellers are Joanne Dadisman.
I've been waiting for this announcement with bated breath. I'm glad to hear.
So we have Joanne Dadisman coming. Joanne tells just really masterfully crafted Appalachian stories, as well as some family tales, but every now and then there'll be family tales in the form of a tall tale. And we will also have Fred Powers, sometimes called Powerhouse. Fred Powers is a retired coal miner, and he tells his stories with the full coal mining outfit and all the tools and equipment, and he tells stories about mining. Sometimes some life or death stories, some folklore. You learn a whole lot about what it's like in underground mining when you listen to his stories.
I'm really looking forward to that.
Yeah, they're both very engaging. Yes, the two of them.
And since these storytellers are local, people may know their names, and certainly they'll be interested in hearing more about them.
Sure.
And maybe following their travels and their performances around the region. What about kids? Are kids of a certain age welcome? Are the tellers aware of the audience?
Yes. What we do is we advertise the concerts, the Tuesday night concerts, as being for adult audiences so that the tellers are allowed to tell whatever they want.
Sure.
There is some, there are some venues that we sometimes get invited to where they say no ghost stories. Or no stories that have this or that or this or that in them. And so we want storytelling and storytellers to have creative license and for them to be able to tell the stories they want to tell. So we allow them the freedom of an adult audience where mm-hmm. there can be more mature themes. And sometimes they don't have to be more mature themes. It's just to further the art of storytelling for an adult audience, since we typically think of it as being for young children. Now, if the teller says, I want this to be a family show, mm-hmm. then we will advertise it as a family show. And so, you know, folks should look and see if we say this is adults only mm-hmm. or adults with mature children. We have a storyteller who's coming for our fifth season. I'm saying that a little slowly because I haven't announced that we're having a fifth season. But we have a storyteller who's coming for our fifth season who is a well-known children's storyteller. In fact, has won some Grammys for children's storytelling. And so that show definitely will be advertised for families.
Okay, good.
But I can't say who that is.
It's a secret. Okay. And you are so good at keeping secrets because I'm only finding out today who the Guild, the West Virginia Guild Tellers will be.
On the air.
So you normally say children over 12? Is that?
Well, we say mature children. And usually when folks make reservations, they say, hey, could my 10-year-old daughter come to mm-hmm. this? Or would it be okay if my 16-year-old son came to this? Mm-hmm. That kind of thing. And if they ask, then I will send that on to the teller and see mm-hmm. what the teller says. Mm-hmm. And then I'll send the teller's response back to the community member.
Okay. So this is a question you hear fairly often.
Yes, just about every show.
Okay. I'm going to go ahead and do another ID, and then I think we'll ask you to share your scary story with us. This is Epic Radio and the Epic Story Hour. If you're looking to find us on your own device, we are at www.enlightenradio.org. On Epic Radio, Eastern Panhandle Independent Community Radio, I'm Fanny Crawford, your Story Hour host, and with me today is Adam Booth.
Hello.
Shepherdstown's favorite storyteller. And Adam's going to share with us a story, a scary story with an amazing musical instrument that he has brought with us. Looks like you could do medical procedures
yeah,
with
this little
box. Yeah, it
does look like that, doesn't it?
Okay, you are up.
Like an old country doctor with this. Yeah. So as I mentioned earlier in the program, earlier this month I was sharing spooky and haunted stories in different parts of our side of the country. I really enjoyed my week at the Starburst Storytelling Festival
yes.
because I got paid really to scare middle schoolers and high schoolers. And so I thought I would share one of the stories that I told to them. And this story is actually a traditional story. It's my version of a traditional story. And it has influences from different versions of this traditional story, as well as, I should make special note that a few years ago, I heard Robin Beatty tell a story that it was not this story, but it had similar subject matter. And when I approached her to say, hey, can I know more about this story, I'd like to look up different traditional versions and see how people are telling it. She said, oh, this is my story. Mm. She said, I created this and I'm the only one who tells it and therefore I keep it guarded that way. But I'm sure that something from how I heard her tell it since I liked it so much has popped up into my story. So here you are. And you'll hear me play this musical instrument to demarcate days in the story. Jesse was too old to be playing with dolls. At least that's what her mother told her. But Jesse didn't care, even though she was now a teenager. See, it had been a tradition every year. Every birthday she got a doll ever since she was born. She had a doll that was as old as she was. She had dolls that she didn't even remember getting. They were just always there. And because that was the tradition, that's what she was expecting for her next birthday, which was coming up. And since it was just a few weeks away, She brought the subject up with her mother. Mom, am I going to get a doll for my birthday this year? And that's when her mother said, Jesse, you're too old to be playing with dolls now, girl. But because it was the tradition, and because she didn't really care what the other kids thought at the school, she kept asking her mother. At breakfast, it was, Mom, what kind of doll am I going to get? When she came home from school, it was, Mom, am I going to get a doll for my birthday this year? And her mom always had the same answer. And for several weeks leading up to her birthday, that was the only thing she would talk about. Talk and talk and talk. She had that thought that maybe if she pestered her mother just enough, she would finally give in, as we all know to do. And finally, when the day of her birth came, she had come home from school and brought up the subject of the doll. Her mother said, Jesse, if I get you the doll, will you please stop talking about it? And she said, yeah. And so that's what they did. They drove into town. Now, Jesse and her mother lived in a town that had one of those old-time downtowns. All the storefronts had big glass windows with displays, where a lot of people still did window shopping. And so the first storefront they came to, there was a doll in the window. Jesse, this is going to be it, right? We'll go in and get this doll and come back. She said, no, Mom, look, that's a Barbie. I have one of those. Oh, come on, she said. Let's not take too much time. They went to the next storefront. There, Jesse, her mother said, there's a doll for you. It was a Raggedy Ann with yarn for hair and big button eyes. Mom, she said, that's a Raggedy Ann. I'm too old for that kind of doll. Jesse, her mother said, let's just get this doll so we can go home. I'm tired of dealing with this. The next store they went to, there was a doll in the window, the kind with the string that you pull on the back. And as the string is wound back into the doll, it says, Mama. But she didn't want that one either. They looked for the better part of an hour, maybe even a whole hour, until they finally came to the storefront that had the doll that was just right. There it is, Jesse said. There in the window was a little doll sitting in a chair. It was a doll about the size of an actual baby, a baby doll. It had a big smile on its face, almost from one ear to the other. The cheeks were out to the side. It had one hand in its lap as it sat in the little chair, and its other hand was raised in the air, making a peace sign with two fingers up. That's the doll, she said. Mom, look at how happy this doll is. Look at how peaceful this doll is. And her mother said, oh, finally. She drug her into that store, and there was a man behind the counter. She said, I would like that doll in the window for my daughter. The man looked back and said, you want that doll? She looked at her daughter, Jessie, and said, Jessie, is that the one you want? Jessie nodded, and Jessie's mother said, yes, that's the one. The man shrugged his shoulders and said, if you're sure. He climbed into the storefront, got that doll, brought it out, wrapped it up in tissue paper, stuck it in a box, handed it to Jesse's mother, who paid for it, and she gave it to her daughter. And as soon as they got home, she tore open that box. She got that doll out. She held it up, and it looked like it was looking right into her eyes. It really was the size of a baby. She held it close to her chest, and as she rocked it back and forth, it almost had the weight of a real baby. She carried it with her the rest of the evening, even to the dinner table. And after dinner, she placed it on her hip, like a real baby. And it could have just been her imagination, but it seemed like the doll leaned into her just a little bit. And the one hand that had been in its lap was around her backside. But when she looked down, it was just smiling from ear to ear with that peace sign raised. She loved that doll so much that she took it up to bed with her. She set it right there on the pillow of her bed, and she turned to go brush her teeth. And as she turned, it seemed like out of the corner of her eyes, she saw the doll's head turn and look at her. But when she looked back, just a smile and a peace sign. Still, that was a little unsettling. So she went back and she picked up the doll. She took it downstairs, put it in the coat closet up on that shelf, closed the closet door, went back upstairs, got into bed after she'd brushed her teeth and changed her clothes. And just as she was drifting off to that place where dreams and reality mix, she thought she heard, "Jesse. Jesse, come play with me. I'm downstairs. Open the closet door so we can play." Her eyes were open. In the bed, she thought, "No, this can't be real. That's just my imagination, right?" And so she rolled over and fell asleep. The next day, she was up and out of bed. She ran down the stairs. She went off to school. And when she came home from school that day, she spent all of the daylight hours outside. "Jesse," her mother called, "dinner." She came in and had dinner, and as soon as dinner was through, she went back outside. She didn't want to be in the house. Her mother thought it was strange she hadn't brought her new doll to dinner with her. But when the sun began to set, she came in and went upstairs. She brushed her teeth, changed her clothes. And just before she got into bed, she closed her bedroom door, made sure that it was closed tight. She got into bed and was drifting off deep into the land of dreams when she heard, "Jesse, Jesse, don't you want to play? I do. I'm on the first step. Come down and play." Her eyes were open again. She thought, "No, this can't be real. It's just my imagination again, right?" She looked. Even though it was dark, she could see that the door was closed. Okay, she was all right. She pulled the cover up close to her chin. She closed her eyes and just waited a long time until she was off, drifting away into dreams. And it was the next day, when she had come home from school, that she decided to check to see if what she had heard was just her imagination. She went to the closet door, placed her hand on the knob, turned it ever so slowly, and opened that door just about the width of her hand. She looked in and it was dark. She couldn't see a thing, so she opened the door a second width. She peeked her head around. She had to put her face into the closet just a little bit. It was still dark, so she flicked on the light and opened the door. But when she looked up, there on the shelf above all the coats, the doll was gone. She went pale. She wandered around the house, feeling half alive. "No, this can't be true. This can't be true. That's a sweet little doll." But when it was time for bed, she closed the door. After she had brushed her teeth and changed her clothes, she got into the bed, wondering what was going on. She pulled the cover up close. She surrounded her head with that pillow. And after a long time, as she started to fall asleep, there was that voice again. "Jesse, come play with me. I'm on the top stair." She was out of bed. She heard that voice for real now. She ran over to where there was a chair in the corner of her bedroom. She brought the chair back to where the door was. She put it at an angle so that the legs were a few feet from the door. The top rung of the chair was fastened right there underneath of the doorknob so that nothing could get in. She felt to make sure it was secure, and as soon as she put the chair there, the doorknob started to turn to the left and to the right with a click. "No," she thought, "no." She got back into the bed, pulled the cover up and over her head. She surrounded herself with that pillow and just kept thinking, "No, no, 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 no." The next day she woke up and she was fast out of the house. She ran to school. It was Friday. When she came home from school, she wandered around. Her mother, Jessie, are you okay? She just barely nodded. At dinner, she just pushed the food around her plate. Jessie, honey, are you feeling ill? She shook her head. But when bedtime came, after she got ready for bed, she closed that door. She locked the door. She put that chair into place to make sure nothing could get into her room. She got into bed. She began to sink down into that mattress. Her eyelids sank down across her face. And just as she drifted into that first dream, Jessie, it's time to play. I'm under your bed. Her eyes were open. She heard it clearly. What was she going to do? She was stuck in the room. She had locked the door and fastened it so nothing could get in, but also she couldn't even get out. She knew that thing was underneath of her bed, just a few feet below her. I know, she thought. I'll call my mom. She'll come down the hallway and come in here. She reached her hand out from under the cover. It was shaking, trembling. As she reached over toward the nightstand, she felt the phone in her hand. She knew her phone so well, she didn't even have to see it. She slid across to unlock it. And as she was going to type for her mother, her hand was shaking so much that she dropped her phone. It hit the floor and rolled under her bed. Jessie. Jessie. She heard that voice. Jessie. 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 Jessie, baby, breakfast is ready. It was Saturday morning. Her mother was calling, Jessie, come on down, honey, breakfast is ready. It was strange that she stayed in bed this long. She must have been really tired. I'll have to go up and get her myself. Her mother walked up those stairs, and when she got to Jessie's door, she placed her hand on the knob and turned it so slowly and pushed open the door. The sunlight was shining into her daughter's room. The blinds were open. It was a sunny morning. The sun shone onto her daughter's bed, which had been made perfectly. She looked up the bed, and there on the pillows was that strange doll her daughter had wanted for her birthday. It was smiling from ear to ear. One hand was in its lap, and the other hand was raised in the air with three fingers pointing up. Jessie's mother looked at the doll, and it looked like the doll was looking right into her eyes. And suddenly she thought, oh, well, this doll isn't so bad. She walked over and she picked it up. It was about the size of a real baby. It felt like one, too. She held it against her breast and began to cradle it back and forth. Oh, you're a sweet little baby doll, she thought. She was so transfixed by the doll that she forgot why she was coming upstairs. She placed it right on her hip like a real baby, and it could have been her imagination, but it seemed like it leaned right into her side, and the back arm reached around her backside. She carried it with her all day, and when bedtime came, Jessie's mother placed that little doll on her pillow of her own bed, smiling from ear to ear with three fingers raised, and as she turned to go brush her teeth, the doll's head turned and looked at her.
Whoa! What a scary, scary story.
Happy Halloween!
They're little girls all over West Virginia staring at their dolls suspiciously. <right now. laughs> I can understand why you wanted that instrument. Tell us what it's called again.
It's called a Shruti box. Shruti box. Shruti. I believe it's used for a lot of meditation and for storytelling and for just a nice accompaniment to singing. you can hear that drone. It'll just go on and on and on as long as you're pumping it. It works the same way, on the same mechanism as like a bagpipe or an organ or a harmonium.
Well, it's perfect for scariness.
Thanks. That's the goal.
Wow. So what was the, tell us the piece that you picked up from Robin Beatty and how did you incorporate that?
I'm not really sure what I picked up from her because I can't remember how her story went. I remember that there was a doll in her story. It was another story about a doll. Mm-hmm. And I remember that the people, that each, it seemed like each person in the family loved the doll. Although it seems like in her story, we'll have to ask her, you should invite her to your show to have her tell the story sometime. Yeah. It seems like in each one of, in her story with the doll, there's a frame to it like mine had, you know, where certain parts keep coming back. But I think that the doll looks different in hers. I think each time it takes on, I think it looks like the person who's disappeared or something like that.
Oh,
I think the dad gets it for his daughter, and then it looks like the daughter or something like that. I can't quite remember, but it was haunting enough. Now, the traditional story that I'm retelling here is sometimes called the doll on the steps or the doll with two fingers or I'm on the first step, something like that.
Wow, that's a real twist on the B-side.
And I've updated it a little bit. You know, like I mentioned, I was telling to a lot of middle schoolers. Mm-hmm. And so probably the scariest part to them every time I told it was when the phone drops on the floor and rolls under the bed, because then it's complete helplessness.
Oh, I had chills up and down my back. Could not imagine what was going to happen. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks for inviting me to share.
That was a great gift. Well, I'm going to ask you to do a station ID, if you're willing, before we move on.
Yes, I would love to do it for you. This is Epic Radio, Eastern Panhandle Independent Community Radio, broadcasting from Shepherdstown, West Virginia. It's the 31st of October. Happy Halloween. My name is Adam Booth. I'm the co-host today. I'm a storyteller, and I'm the co-host with the storyteller and impresario, Fanny Crawford.
Thank you, Adam.
And this is your storytelling program.
Yes. And I have to remember to keep mentioning the website where people can tune in if they hear about us. It's www.enlightenradio.org. Well, you've completely derailed me with that story. Everything has flown out of my head. I wanted to talk just for a second about stories in the round, and then I'm going to circle back and ask you a little bit more about Appalachian scary stories.
Sure.
Because you're such an expert on this topic, and this would be the day to talk about that. So stories in the round, we've been talking about Speak, which is the series that you coordinate for Shepherdstown, and that's usually the second Tuesday of the month. This month it's November 15th because of Election Day. Stories in the Round is a series that I coordinate in Hagerstown at the Unitarian Universalist Church, and that's on Searfoss Pike, 13245 Searfoss Pike. If our listeners know Hagerstown, that's Salem Avenue extended west, becomes Searfoss Pike. And our November program will be none other than Adam Booth.
I know him.
And that's the fourth Monday of the month. And Adam will be there telling a mix. Actually, give us some. You may not know exactly what you're going to be telling.
I don't know for certain right now.
But you know a little bit about.
Yeah, I visited your series before in November.
Yes.
And told some Thanksgiving stories.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 'tis the season. So I might do some sort of family story like that. Mm-hmm. But as it's about 3.5 weeks away.
Yeah.
I still don't quite know.
Still
lots of
time to be inspired. Okay. Well, and we meet at 7 in the evening on the fourth Monday. Our fee structure is the same as yours, $10 in advance or $12 at the door. And listeners can access that advance registration or those tickets by calling 301-730-1638 or emailing me. That's Fenitsky, F as in Fanny, A-N as in no, I-T-S-K-Y at hotmail.com.
You also have a Facebook page, is that correct?
I do, and you can access that by going to Fanny Crawford's Storyteller and contact me that way. Either way is fine. And in December, we have Geraldine Buckley coming, and we have changed that date for the first time also, as you have changed your speak date this month. This time it's because Geraldine Buckley is our storyteller, and she will be going back to Britain for the Christmas holiday. That's actually Boxing Day when we wanted her to come, and she said, oh no, there's no way I could come on Boxing Day. And so we've changed the date, and it's the 19th of December, the Monday before Boxing Day, before the Christmas holiday.
And you say back to Britain because Geraldine is
British. Yes. And so listeners may know Geraldine from her bright red hair and her very funny stories. So we're looking forward to hearing both of you.
Well, thank you.
Adam in November and Geraldine in December. Okay, well, tell us a little bit more about scary stories as an Appalachian form, as an Appalachian story form. I've heard a number of West Virginia tellers telling scary stories at the Speak Series. Mm-hmm. So I know that you're always on the lookout for those kinds of stories.
Yeah, you know, when we talk about storytelling, one of the brick walls that we often run against is that people think that storytelling is reading a book, mm-hmm. or reading a book to children, mm-hmm. something like that. And there's, you know, what we are always having to do is advocate for the work that we do and who we are and what it is we do. But when people know what storytelling is, often the first genre of stories that they think of is scary stories, because that's often when people of all ages will get together to hear stories.
Yes.
And so scary stories, number one, a lot of people love to hear them and a lot of people love to listen to them, because we have this just perpetual intrigue with the unknown, mm-hmm. as human beings. And here in Appalachia, we have all kinds of scary stories for a number of different reasons. Some of those reasons are because of the terrain, the geography in Appalachia, mm. because you can't open your door or your window and look very far because of the hills, you know. Yeah. There's always this intrigue of what's over there. There are lots of shadows in Appalachia. What's in the shadows? There are lots of unusual sounds because it's such a rural place. It's such a forested place. You know, what made that sound? And because it's so dark, you know, we see more things at night than you would see in cities. So, you know, what was the thing that just shone across the sky? Lots of intrigue about all of that. Wild animal sounds, you know, the gurgling of streams that are so prominent in Appalachia. So there's a lot of intrigue that way. Plus, a lot of the people that came to settle in Appalachia brought with them their own storytelling beliefs. Many of them brought beliefs about ghosts and witches that were part of religious practices and spiritual beliefs. And those stories were passed down through the generations in little communities around Appalachia. And then additional beliefs were developed. And that is, of course, just the people that moved into Appalachia. The people that were already living here, mm-hmm. before Europeans and Africans came to this area, mm-hmm. had their own spiritual beliefs about this area. So this is a place that is just full of haunting stories, spiritually connected stories, scary or not. And then, of course, just all of the elements that lead to the setting of great spooky stories. And so we have all these great creatures, Talipo, for example, the Snallygaster. We have all kinds of great ghost stories about vanishing hitchhikers, about coal mining ghosts, dismembered ghosts, where the body part that was lost in a mining accident reappears, like an arm that points. There are lots of stories about killing and eating people. when times are desperate, and then their ghost comes back to haunt them. And a lot of these ghost stories that I'm mentioning here are what we would call haunt stories. We also have haint stories, which are different spirits altogether. Haints were never alive. They're not the ghosts of people. They are spirits, and therefore, because they were never people, they might be malevolent. You know, they might want to come against you, and there's nothing you can do because they were never human and they don't have empathy. We have lots of other creatures that are more familiar that came with Europeans. So werewolf stories, vampire stories. If people want to check out those stories in particular, there's a great book called The Green Hills of Magic that Ruth Ann Music collected and published. Those are European folk tales from that were collected in West Virginia in particular. Mm-hmm. Lynn Ford, our favorite Afro-Latian storyteller, has published a number of books about Afro-Latian storytelling, and in those there are creepy and haunting stories, as well as some that are specifically about those creepy stories.
Well, fortunately, we don't have to get all those stories in on one day. We tell scary stories all year round.
Yeah, we can.
Thanks for that. I learned several new pieces of information.
You know, I could go on and on about that.
I bet you could. And I'm sure you do when you do workshops and classes.
Right.
Well, thanks for sharing that little bit.
Sure.
Both for me and for our listeners.
Sure.
I want to circle back for a minute because I interrupted you at one point. You were going to tell us about the fundraiser at the community club tomorrow evening.
Sure. So tomorrow, which is November the 1st, so if you're listening to a replay of this program, it might not be tomorrow. November the 1st at the Shepherdstown Community Club, the Shepherdstown Community Club will be holding their monthly fundraiser. And if you're familiar with those, or even if you're not, it's usually a dinner. And after the dinner, there's some sort of entertainment. And for November, I will be the entertainment. I'll be telling a program of stories after the dinner. This is, I think, the third time they've invited me to tell. It's a fundraiser for the community club, which puts on a number of programs throughout the year. They have a great venue in town where lots of art shows happen, book sales happen, our storytelling series happens there. And they also manage the Morgan's Grove Park. So the fundraiser, so the fundraiser is more than just to, you know, just to benefit what we think of as the War Memorial Building where the community club is. There's a lot of projects and outreach that they do.
I had heard about the dinner and I'd been hoping to get there, but I finally checked my calendar and I have a conflict.
But it's tough being busy.
I was looking forward to hearing you tell there, but hope our listeners can come out. And can they just show up? Do they need to register in advance?
They need a reservation. I'm pretty certain. I don't know where the ticket sales are right now, but I would contact the community club through their website about a reservation if they're hearing this program and decide that they want to go. Okay. It's usually a really good meal, and the stories are, pretty good.
I imagine the stories are going to be wonderful. Is that a catered event, or are the members of the community club board or somebody providing?
They cook the meal there, up in the kitchen. Mm-hmm. And it's usually a really nice hearty meal. I think it might be a turkey dinner tomorrow.
Oh, good. Okay. So that's something.
It was the last time I did it, and I told last November. Mm-hmm. I just can't remember what the email said.
Okay, but listeners can find all that information by going to the website and contacting them.
For the Shepherdstown Community Club, yes. Yeah,
very good. Okay, well, you've talked about Speak.
Uh-huh.
And you shared the website for Speak, and you shared your phone number.
Uh-huh.
I went on your website this week. When I was preparing for this program, I had not been on your website for a while. So there was new stuff there that I hadn't. Either I had missed it before or it's been up since I was on last time. But there was a bit about your Appalachia 20th Century.
Oh, yeah.
So I thought you might talk about that and your other CDs and let our listeners know how to access those, how to find them.
Sure. So just briefly, I got my start in professional storytelling through the West Virginia Liars Contest. And early on was, I guess, identified as I tried to identify myself this way as a champion liar. And as I have grown as a storyteller and tried to become more of an Appalachian storyteller, increasing the stories I tell and the traditional stories I research. And, you know, I've tried to branch out to be more than just a liar, which I think I have succeeded at. And so one of the projects I've embarked upon is what I call the Appalachian 20th Century. This is a series of stories that's taking me many, many years to create. And each story in the series represents a different decade in the 20th century in Appalachia. And so the first story that I created is called Ashton. And part of the set, I put some challenges up. Each story would be program length, so that story alone could be a full concert.
Mm-hmm.
Each story would be set in Appalachia during that particular decade. Each story would have some history, a little bit of historical fiction in there. So they're centered around an Appalachian event, an important event in Appalachian history. And the characters in the story, I would attempt to use characters to build characters that showed people a greater depth to the people that live in Appalachia. You know, trying to move past the negative stereotypes that we have. There'd be a little music in each story, and they would also combine or be based upon two traditional stories. So the 1920s story, which is the first that I started telling, is Ashton, as I mentioned. Ashton is based upon Cinderella and also Orpheus in the underworld. So it takes the structures of both of those stories and creates a new story that is set in the 20s around the Bristol Sessions. The Bristol Sessions is what people call the Big Bang of country music. It's when Ralph Peer came to Bristol, Tennessee, Virginia, and recorded what they were calling hillbilly music at that time to really voyage into an essentially untapped market in the recording industry. And the folks who were recorded there, many of their records went on to sell huge numbers, and it birthed a few stars, including the Carter family and Jimmy Rogers. So that's my first story in that set, and it's available now on CD, recorded live at the National Storytelling Festival.
And made quite a splash in Jonesboro last year. Standing ovation that went on and on and on and on. You took us by storm.
Thank you. So the next story in that series, which I have started telling this year, is called Daniel the Great. Daniel the Great is my 1980s piece. It looks at Daniel, who is a carnival worker, who has left his home in East Kentucky to live on the carnival circuit as a fortune teller. And he makes his way home to his rural East Kentucky community to approach his dad about something, to find that his dad has died and his brother has inherited, or at least arisen into the position of preacher for his childhood Pentecostal church. It is based on the stories of the prodigal son and Daniel and the writing on the wall. The third story in the series, I'll tell you about a couple more really quickly. Okay. I see that our time is coming close. The third story is called Blind John. It's my aughts story, 1900. Mm-hmm. It's still a work in progress. I had intended to start telling it by the end of this year, but it's not quite ready. And until I tell them, I don't like to tell what stories they're based upon.
Yeah.
It's about a blind blues musician. It looks at blues history right at the turn of the century, who is coming home, not really coming home. He has to meet a supernatural being at some crossroads, not geographically, but in his life, and deal with a few demons in his life and the curse of being a fantastic lover that came along with the blues musicianship. I have sketches for a few of the other stories. I'm just starting to look at my 1960s story, but because of some of the historical events, it might be pushed up in the 1970s. I don't know quite yet, but it's a fun project. I intend to release all of the stories so that at one point it can be a big box next collection. I've failed to mention that I'm inspired in this series by August Wilson, the playwright, his Pittsburgh cycle that looked at the African-American experience in the 20th century. I'm trying to do the same in story with the Appalachian experience in the 20th century.
Well, I've heard versions of all three of these stories, and I'm just fascinated by this project, the scope of this project, and the research involved, and the passion for Appalachian people that you're incorporating into this. So,
thanks.
So if people want to check out your Ashton CD or your earlier CDs, how would we do that?
Well, if they're on their computers or tablets, they can go to my website, which is adam-booth.com. I have a store page there. It's a little wonky on your cell phone. But you can also find me on CD Baby. If you go to cdbaby.com, you can look me up as Adam Booth and find three of my recordings there, which include Ashton, another CD called 210, and another CD called The Mountain Came Alive. My first CD is not available there. You have to go to my website for that. And then I'm also, you can find me on amazon.com. You can find me on iTunes, a number of streaming services. If you like what you hear, I'd encourage you to purchase it. Streaming services, if you're a consumer and not a producer, you might not know this, but streaming services pay something like a fraction of a cent each time you listen. And for artists, it really helps if you make the purchase. Yes. This is my big pitch, not just for me, but for other artists as well. So you can check me out on iTunes, like I said, CD Baby, my website, Amazon, and a number of other services and music distribution sites around the internet.
And these are great CDs to have available at Thanksgiving time when your family is coming in and you want to share your passion for storytelling, listeners.
And for the holidays. For gifts.
For gifts for holidays. So thank you.
Thanks for asking.
All right. Well, we have used up our time. Thanks for giving me a heads up. I'm so enthralled listening to you that I tend to lose track of time. This is Fanny Crawford signing off on Epic Radio in Shepherdstown, West Virginia, closing out Noontime Epic Radio Story Hour. We've been talking with our special favorite co-host, Adam Booth. Thank you, Adam.
You're
for
welcome.
For joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Well, I hope that our listeners get to hear you either tomorrow or they see you at Speak when Oba William King is there on November 15th. Slightly different date this month. And I like to end by reminding our listeners of our mission. Epic Story Hour offers you, the listener, a window into the world of storytelling by traditional and non-traditional tellers, encouraging our listening community to share, preserve, and expand our own stories. So thanks for listening. Thanks to Adam Booth. And stay tuned for H.P. Lovecraft and the Dunwich Hour.
Happy Halloween!
Goodbye.